It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. During this dark and scary time, there are many points of light. We've seen neighborhoods come together virtually, coming up with decorating themes for families to enjoy when they go out for walks, coordinating support for elderly neighbors, socially distant birthday surprises for people who are stuck at home. We've also seen a lot of parents swapping homeschooling or entertainment ideas for their kids. We've seen teachers go out en masse to drive around neighborhoods to wave at their students, to offer comfort and just to see their faces. We've seen innovators coordinate incredible efforts to create personal protective equipment for healthcare workers. 3D printers are working overtime at university labs, Nubo City Market in Cedar Rapids, and many other places. Mr. Rogers once told us to look for the helpers, and they are everywhere. But of course, that was a message for children. The message for adults is that we can be the helpers. And this hour, we're going to meet some innovative helpers and find out how each one of us can make a difference. Later in the hour, Des Moines resident Siobhan Spain and her husband have both tested positive for COVID-19. Siobhan will give us her firsthand account. And before we start our conversations, I also want to reiterate that if you can do nothing but stay at home to avoid spreading this virus, that is still an important contribution. You are making a difference right now. But if you can do more, there are some options. My first guest today is Michelle Raymer. She's Senior Program Officer for Volunteer Iowa. Michelle, welcome.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And Iowa is kind of famous for having an incredible volunteer culture. We have a lot of volunteers in this state, but a lot of our volunteers are retired people. So that means that they're people who are extra vulnerable at this time. How have we seen COVID-19 impact our volunteer population?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Iowa is well known for our great volunteering numbers. However, as you mentioned, a lot of those core volunteers, especially some of those volunteers who are the volunteers that come every day of the week to help deliver meals with Meals on Wheels or other programs, those are some of the same volunteers who right now need to stay home because they're at a high-risk population. So at a time where a lot of organizations are seeing a spike in need and a need in volunteer support, at that same time, they're seeing their core volunteers needing to take a step back. And so we are seeing some urgent needs developing around volunteering.
Well, at the same time, we're seeing a lot of people stuck at home who don't want to be stuck at home, who are not in that highly vulnerable population. So that does create a real opportunity, doesn't it?
Definitely. And so we really encourage that anyone who is able to volunteer, who's not in one of those high risk categories and doesn't have someone at home that's high risk, that they consider what they can do to volunteer and give back. And so on our website at volunteeriowa.org, we've created we have a statewide volunteer opportunity database year round, but we've created a special spotlight for those opportunities that are related to urgent COVID-19 response needs.
All right. And I'm sure that there are some other local organizations around the state and in every community that may not have made it on that list. So if there's something that is close to your heart, check in and see if they need your help. But let's talk about some of the areas there that have a lot of need. So let's start with food. First, with food banks. Of course, there are a lot of people who have lost their jobs. There are a lot of people who are going to or already having trouble feeding their families. What are you hearing from food banks?
Yeah, so food distribution is definitely a huge need right now. So at food banks, oftentimes they have, let people come in and choose their own groceries. But in order to mitigate risk, they're instead having volunteers packing up bags and then distributing it to people who come and check in. And as you mentioned, there's the ongoing need that already exists in our community. But then on top of that, people who are looking at work shortages and needing that extra support. And so we're seeing demand rise at food pantries, again, at the same time that some of those core volunteers have needed to step back. And so there is a need for volunteers to help with the food packaging, food distribution, taking mobile food pantries where they're taking food and dropping them off. So a lot of needs around food distribution.
Well, and I'm sure food banks also need donations at this time. And I know that over the past few years, I've seen really an increasing educational effort among food banks to really say, hey, monetary donations are better for us because we have this buying power and we can get more for our dollar. But also, I can imagine that right now, monetary donations are even more important because that means fewer people are going to be touching the food.
Exactly. And really, it's the case with all disasters, including a pandemic like this, that cash is always the best donation because it can be used to get what is most needed at that particular time. And we know that things are constantly changing.
Now, you mentioned Meals on Wheels. There's a need for drivers. What do you have to do to qualify to be a driver for Meals on Wheels?
Yeah, so what we recommend is that people reach out to an organization that they care about that cause and want to get involved and talk to each of those organizations to see what specific requirements or skills they have. And so they can reach out, and maybe if they don't qualify for whatever the requirements are for that particular role, they may have another role in which the person can serve.
All right. And do you feel like there's probably a particular need right now for people with commercial vehicle permits? I mean, we should all probably think, what are my special skills? But is that something that if you're at home and you have one of those licenses, you should also think about reaching out?
Yeah. So really, we can encourage everyone who has special skill sets to reach out to nonprofits that they care about or that they know have a need and offer those skills and say, hey, this is what I have to offer. Is that something that can help you right now? Because it could be something, like a CDL, but it could also be other pro bono skills that you can provide to an organization that will provide that infrastructure support while then they can focus their other staff and resources on direct service.
Blood is also a great need. And of course, usually the Red Cross is organizing blood drives all over the place. And most of those blood drives had to be canceled. I was just making my appointment to donate blood, and they are still trying to set up socially distant blood drives. But what do people need to know about that?
Yeah, I would just encourage people to call ahead with their local place where they donate blood, just so that way they can see what their local organization is doing. Some of them are moving to scheduling appointments, so that way they can space out blood donations and, again, practice some of those social distancing to keep everyone safe while still meeting that high demand need for blood donations.
A lot of volunteer organizations have an onboarding procedure where they go through a training program and make sure that all of their volunteers, are on the same page. I can imagine that's a real challenge for organizations that are getting a bunch of new volunteers right now but can't be in the same room with them.
Right. And I know organizations are being creative because there is this need. So looking at opportunities to do things virtually, to do things online, to create videos or to do over the phone or to do kind of just in time trainings and orientations for people as they arrive at the site to get that information they need to do their role well and stay safe while also being able to get started serving the community as soon as they can.
There are a lot of young people in Iowa who are out of school. Is this an opportunity for teenagers to get involved?
Definitely. And we know that some colleges and schools have, silver cord and service learning and silver cord hour requirements or recommendations. And so it's an opportunity to not only give back, but also potentially contribute to some of those things. And so, again, just looking at their community, reaching out, see what they can do to help and get started.
I've seen a number of really innovative ways that people are helping, as I mentioned earlier, and we've seen a number of animal food pantries start to pop up as people are asking for help feeding their pets if they've lost their jobs. There's a young woman in Iowa City who's a University of Iowa student who created a whole organization out of nothing where she had people volunteer to run errands for those who can't run their own errands or should not run their own errands, and has really coordinated hundreds of people in the Iowa City area to fill those needs. What kind of unusual and innovative things have you seen springing up right now?
Yeah, so a lot of people are just trying to think of what they can do to help. So all of the things that you mentioned and talked about in your introduction, too, there are a lot of great things people are doing. Many people have heard about sewing face masks for different organizations. I know one group that is asking for people to make T-shirt bags so that way they have more bags to put food in to distribute to families. Organizations looking for people to foster animals or adopt animals at this time. And I think, you know, talking with kids about things they can do, it can be hard to not see your friends. So letting them know that by social distancing, they are volunteering. They're helping people who would be really sick if they did go out. And so they're helping to stop that spread. And little things they can do, like drawing pictures on the sidewalk for people as they're walking, or picking up trash on walks, or making cards or artwork for people who, seniors who maybe can't go out right now, to lift their spirits.
So that's another, you mentioned connecting with others. That's another area where people can volunteer without even leaving the house. I noticed that on your website you have opportunities for people to sign up to be pen pals with people who are in care facilities. Tell me a little bit more about those opportunities.
Yeah, so another thing we're trying to encourage, in addition kind of just the neighboring, checking in on your neighbors, loved ones, seniors in your area to see if they need anything, if there's any errands you can run for them, but also looking at those virtual opportunities. So can you make a phone call to connect with someone, be a pen pal? We have the Future Ready Iowa program is looking for e-mentors for new college students. And so signing up as to be an e-mentor to help students as they are in college. So looking at those virtual opportunities. It could also include using their skills. You know, nonprofits are in need of people to do things like researching for them, or developing their websites, or doing graphic design or curriculum development or technical writing. So thinking about what skills you have that even if you yourself aren't able to go out, that you could still do virtually to help support the nonprofit community.
All right. So if people go to volunteeriowa.org and look at your information, what do people who wish that their organizations were on your website need to do? Because I'm sure that there are many people thinking, oh, we need volunteers. How can we get the word out?
Yes. Yeah, so on our website, again, it's a statewide opportunity database that's there year round. Nonprofits on there, there's a link to share your volunteer opportunities. So you can pretty quickly set up an account and begin posting those opportunities. And then the public can also go on and search for those opportunities. So you can go on, again, you can look for those COVID-19 specific related things. You can also search for virtual volunteer opportunities. You can search by zip code or county. You can search by interest area. And so people can go on there and search to find the best fit for them. And nonprofits across the state can post those opportunities. And there's a network of volunteer centers across the state. So you might be connected to your local volunteer center, like the United Way of Wapello County, or Volunteer Center of Cedar Valley, or Volunteer Siouxland. There's volunteer centers across the state. And all of them have platforms for posting those opportunities, and they also automatically feed up to our statewide site.
Michelle, thank you so much. Michelle Raymer, the website is volunteeriowa.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, a Des Moines woman will share her firsthand account of getting COVID-19. But right now, we are exploring ways that people can help each other during this pandemic. Mary Frances Evans is the executive director of IRIS. That is a free news and information service that broadcasts for Iowans who are unable to read because of blindness, physical or visual impairment, or learning differences. And before the pandemic hit, volunteers in 7 locations around the state were sitting down in front of IRIS microphones to read out loud from local newspapers. But of course, that all changed with COVID-19. Mary Frances, thank you so much for being here today.
Good morning, friend.
Thank you so much. And tell me what happened when you learned about this pandemic, because you had to shut down operations, at least as usual, pretty quickly.
You know, we have about 600 beautiful volunteers across the state reading in all those locations, and most of them are retired seniors. And as things started to look like this thing was going to blow up as it did, my board of directors said, let's pull all those readers out of the remote locations. So we started beginning to make a plan, and then within 24 hours, it was clear we needed to shut down everybody everywhere. So in a hurry, we built a team of home readers. We're still looking for folks, and people are reading on their iPhones and on their PCs and on their iPads and every other thing.
Wow. So tell me how people are reading at home. I mean, that's a completely different experience from sitting down in front of a microphone. It's not something that you can broadcast live. So how is all of this working?
The IRIS has an itty-bitty staff. It's me and one other full-time person, and then we have some part-time people. But I'm running this off my iPhone, basically, wherever I am, and then my dining room table. So if you read a paper for me today, let's say you read the Cedar Rapids Gazette, you'd read it for about an hour, and we have guidelines on how to upload it and what to read. You would Dropbox the file to me. I would get it on my end. We would clean you up. Not that you would need any cleaning, Charity. But, you know, if
most
anything
of us
needs
do.
Fix,
yep.
Yeah. And then we put music on the front and back, and then we upload it to our automation system downtown. So we do this for 12, 13 files a day, and all day long, people are sending in files, and we're editing and loading them and just hoping the internet holds.
Wow. Well, and I was going to ask that. Not only are you working with volunteers who may have never had to do anything technical like this before and don't have any professional recording equipment at home, but also most of us have Wi-Fi at home, and we don't necessarily pay for a package that is going to support uploading huge files. Has that been a problem?
Well, it wasn't until you mentioned it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
No, we are mono as opposed to stereo. So, yes, our files are audio, and yes, they're bigger than you can't email them, but they're still small enough that it doesn't tax the system too much. But, folks are using the first step is you would email us, iris@iowaradioreading.org, and say, I'm interested. And then we would start asking questions. What kind of equipment do you have? And we would kind of ask about your level of comfort with the internet and with things like that. And then you send us an audition, 10 or 15 seconds, just to check the sound. And if it sounds good, we sign you up.
How has your broadcast changed? Because again, as I mentioned, I mean, people were in 7 different locations around the state reading the local newspaper for their local listeners, but you've had to make some pretty big adjustments.
Well, the thing I forgot to mention off the top is that IRIS could not do what we do without Iowa Public Radio. And I know you guys are not doing your spring drive, and pretty much no one is, because we have lots of things to focus on right now besides fundraising. But most people don't understand that IRIS travels on a side channel of Iowa Public Radio's technical framework. And so when you make a donation to Iowa Public Radio, you're also keeping IRIS alive, serving 11,000 Iowans with news and information. So there's my plug for you. So number one, thank you. Number two, at 8 o'clock in the morning, as if by magic, our signal splits into 7 pieces. So Sioux City hears Sioux City, and Cedar Rapids hears Cedar Rapids, and so on across the state. We can't do that now. So we completely threw our program schedule out the window, and we're now airing all of the papers statewide every day. So we've had to push some things aside, like some of our other programming, like our motorcycle show, but right now that's okay. So for instance, today we had the Fort Dodge Messenger at 7, Mason City Globe Gazette at 8, 3 hours of the Register, and we have to break it into 1 hour chunks. And then at noon, you'll hear the Cedar Rapids Gazette, 1 o'clock, the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier, 2 o'clock, the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, read by the sisters at the Mount Carmel thing over there. All the sisters live out there at the retirement home. 3 o'clock, Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil, 4 o'clock, Sioux City Journal, 5 o'clock, Ames Tribune. So, yeah, we're doing a lot of newspapers.
Yeah, so tell me what you're hearing from your listeners, because I know you have a special relationship with a lot of them, and a lot of your listeners also fall into that vulnerable population. So they're stuck at home. IRIS has become even more of a lifeline for some people.
Yeah, I mean, our listeners, predominantly super seniors, 80 plus, equally women and men, they're already isolated because most of them don't drive. So many of them are rural. And so this isolation thing that the rest of us are getting used to is old hat for them. So here comes this virus, and they are the most vulnerable people in the population to it. And so I put up a Facebook last week talking about my 10th anniversary with the organization. And You know, IRIS is like IPR. We don't hear from our listeners on the other end very often. They just expect to turn it on and we're there. So we got this comment, and listener Maggie writes, "Thank you for all you do. I'm one of those that rely on IRIS. IRIS is my best companion. I fall into the category of a blind senior, and I'm very scared during these times. IRIS is that voice in the darkness that makes you feel everything's going to be all right and that you aren't alone." So you read something like that, and it really drives home the importance of what we do, which is simply reading the local paper out loud. And there's a lot of local information, local resources flying around now, so it's even more important that we let folks know about that. But that I'm going to frame that message because it's a constant reminder that while it just seems like we're reading a local paper, we really, really, really are connecting to people on the other end. We're the only visitor they get in their home.
Oh. So, Mary Frances, you are still looking for volunteers. How do you characterize your need? How many people do you think you need to help you out during this time?
Well, you know, 2 weeks ago, we were fine. But now, as I said, this local information that is constantly pumping out. For example, if you used to go to a county meal site to get a free lunch, well, those are closed now. And we have to let people know how to get those meals. So actually, there's more information we need to get out than there was 2 weeks ago. So I'm looking for anyone. We are not looking for broadcasty or sexy voices. We are neighbors reading to neighbors. So if you have some time, it takes about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half to read a 55-minute or to fill a 55-minute paper. We're looking for folks who obviously have the internet. We read all of our papers. We read the online versions. We have a schedule on our website. You don't have to do it every day. You can just choose a paper. Email us, say, "I'll take the Cedar Rapids Gazette for tomorrow," and we'll put you in. But basically, it all starts by just pop us an email at iris@iowaradioreading.org, and then we'll put that together. Another thing that is becoming, I believe, more important than it was 2 weeks ago, I need people to help us gather those local resources. I'm going to hear about Polk County stuff here in Des Moines, but I'm going to have trouble finding that there are resources in Dubuque for people who need meals delivered or what have you. So I need some folks to help kind of scour the web and gather that information so we can get it out in an announcement.
Well, Mary Frances, thank you so much for all you do. And thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Hey, thank you for all you do. And everybody just, you know, stay safe.
You too. Mary Frances Evans is the executive director of IRIS. That is a free news and information service that broadcasts for Iowans who are unable to read for any reason. You can get in touch if you'd like to volunteer at iris@iowaradioreading.org or look for their website, iowaradioreading.org. Now, our next guest saw a unique need and was uniquely capable of filling that need. Mary Swander is the artistic director of Swander Woman Productions. She is executive director and founder of Ag Arts. She's former poet laureate of Iowa, published author, poet, and playwright, and many other things as well. She lives in rural Johnson County, and she became worried about her Amish neighbors. Mary, hello.
Oh, hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Mary, for people who aren't familiar, you live in rural Johnson County, and most of your neighbors are actually Amish. Tell me a little bit about the area that you live in.
Well, I live in an old one-room Amish schoolhouse, and I'm surrounded by Old Order Amish people here. You know, the settlement in Johnson and Washington County is 5,000 Amish and Mennonites, so it's a significant community.
So as you were hearing about this pandemic spreading, about COVID-19 making its way to Iowa, what made you start to worry about your neighbors?
Well, I'd had some conversations with several of them, and it was clear that they didn't know anything about the virus. And one day I was at my neighbor's around the corner, and I said, "Now listen, like, you should stay at home. You got to stay at home and like, don't go out to big box stores. They love to go into Iowa City to big box stores. And they said, oh, well, we're going there tomorrow. And I'm like, no, who's taking you? And they said, oh, we have a driver. He's a really nice guy. He just got back from a cruise. And I was like, ah, help, don't do that. And, you know, and they don't have internet. They don't have TV. They don't have radio or newspapers. And so how would they know the significance of this? And they thought I was just an alarmist. And, you know, and then I talked to other people in the community, and they just didn't know about it at all. And, you know, they were saying a virus. Like, what do you mean a virus? And, you know, and I thought, oh, boy. And so Stephanie Leonard, who's a friend of mine out here, lives near me, and I put our heads together, and she called the County Department of Health for Johnson and Washington County. And then I copied off the CDC's recommendations. This is right when we got, you know, the stay-at-home.
Right, just at really at the beginning of all of the social distancing.
Right. And what really worried me was, you know, I'd sit here looking out my window and little kids are going to school and their little pony carts and their buggy after buggy after buggy coming down the road going to their church services. And I'm like, oh, man, they just don't have the word. And so I copied off the CDC's recommendations and went around the neighborhood and stuffed them in, you know, mailboxes, and so that, you know, they would be aware of this. And then the county health departments did get a hold of the bishops, who are like their pastors, and told them, you know, what was going on. And so they then closed their schools, and as far as I know, their church services, and because the buggy traffic has dramatically decreased.
Well, the Amish, of course, in one sense, we think, well, they're very isolated, so maybe they're not as at risk. But as you mentioned, they do mix with other people
right.
through businesses. But also they're particularly vulnerable because they live in very large family, multi-generational
right.
family groups. So you must have been so worried for your friends.
No, I really was. I mean, they have three generations on a farm. So there's a lot of elderly people, you know, living in close contact with others. And then they almost all of them have some kind of on-farm business where people from the outside world come and, you know, their greenhouses and little stores and bakeries and people coming in and out all the time. And then they travel a lot. People don't understand that. You know, somebody dies in Ohio and they rent a Greyhound bus and they, you know, there'll be like 50 people pile into the bus and off they go. And so things are, you know, it's a semi-communal settlement. So they are in very close contact with each other. And I've seen it. I've seen them just get the regular flu and have it. It's amazing to me. It just rips right through the community, just a regular flu virus, because, again, in that close association. And, you know, they had the regular flu earlier this winter, and they were like, now Levi has it now, Gerald has it now. You know, they just went down the line. And this is, they're not just talking about an individual. They're talking about a whole family
right.
that would come down with the flu.
Well, Mary, obviously you were worried about your neighbors, but I know that your heart is bigger than just your neighborhood. In thinking about the vulnerability of your Amish neighbors, that makes me think about the vulnerability of so many different communities in Iowa,
right.
like refugee communities, et cetera.
Right.
What would you say to people who may be worried about their neighbors? You were able to take action and do something. What would you say
right.
to the rest of us?
Find some way. I mean, you know, that's why I stuffed things into mailboxes, because that was, by that time, you know, I knew enough not to be going knocking on door to door to door anymore. So find some way to, and it might take some creativity to communicate with these groups and to pass on the word. That there was a little article about me doing this in the Des Moines Register, and that's gone viral. I've heard from people all over the world saying the same thing. Oh, I wonder if such and such group is aware of what's going on, you know. And I'm like, okay, good. So this has helped spread the word that not all of us have internet. I mean, lots and lots of people in the rural area besides the Amish don't have internet.
Right. Well, and lots of people in urban areas do not as well. Some of us are living in this age of information saturation, but our neighbors are not. Mary, we are out of time, but thank you so much for taking action, and thank you for inspiring so many others as well. And stay well, Mary.
You too. Thanks for having me on, Charity.
Mary Swander is the Artistic Director of Swander Woman Productions, Executive Director of Ag Arts, and former Poet Laureate of Iowa. She's been looking out for her Amish neighbors to make sure they have the information they need to stay healthy and well during this pandemic. Coming up in just a moment, we'll meet a woman who has COVID-19. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.